Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
DC at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. In the discussion of entrepreneurship, we are often focused on the business plan, the product, the marketing of said product. But what about the actual production and scaling up of the manufacturing? We hear on the news of the decline of manufacturing in America, but I would offer a suggestion to those listening to take a look at the robust food manufacturing industry and how food small businesses nationwide are yearning for a way to scale up with less barriers to entry. And before welcoming our guest today to discuss this topic and more, I want to talk about a particular food adjacent item that really captures a lot of what we discuss here on The Tidbit: sociocultural nuances, capitalism and the American dream, and the necessity of considering all stakeholders involved when building a business. And that means from your customers to the planet. So what is this item that we need to discuss? It's the straw. And I want to quote this recently published piece in The Atlantic titled Disposable America. The invention of American industrialism, the creation of urban life, suburbia and its hamburger-loving teens, better living through plastics, and the financialization of the economy. The straw was there for all these things. You can learn about a lot about this country and the dilemmas of contemporary capitalism by taking a straw-eyed view. Wow, this is definitely a loaded statement, and you may be wondering, where is the author going with this? We will link to the full article on our show notes on the blog, so you can head over to curate.co/blog, curate.co/blog. But I do want to read a bit more from this piece, especially since news broke yesterday that Starbucks will be banning the use of single-use plastic straws by 2020, which is pretty incredible. So where did this straw craze come from? So cities began requiring the use of straws in the late 1890s, and a Wisconsin paper noted that in 1896, that already in many cities, ordinances have been issued making the use of wrapped drinking straws essential in public eating spaces, mostly because of public contamination and health issues. But what happened to the straw industry is far more interesting than its technical advances. Three of the biggest names in the industry, Friedman's Flexi Straw Company, the Lilly Tulip Cup Corporation, and the Maryland Cup Corporation, all three companies' histories intersect with each other, as well as the structural changes that happen to those companies. They mirror the changes in the American economy. But first, we have to talk about McDonald's and its key role in the production of straws, starting with Ray Kroc, who built the McDonald's empire. For 16 years, he sold cups for the Lilly Tulip Cup Corporation, one of those three companies I just mentioned. And he's quoted saying, "I don't know what appealed to me so much about paper cups, but I sensed from the outset that paper cups were a part of the way America was headed. America was tilting towards speed and disposability, and throwaway products were the future." And the article closes stating that local governments may legislate the use of plastic straws, but they can't do a thing about the vast system that's attached to the straw, which created first these disposable products, and then they go on to say disposable companies and disposable people. I highly recommend reading the full article, because that interconnectedness of those three straw manufacturing companies with the rise of McDonald's and the change in capitalist practices have led to the current state of disposability in America, and how that's ultimately impacting the health of our communities and planet today. And in my opinion, our guest today, Sid Sharma of Wild Kombucha, is fighting against this system with the production of his product, and proceeds from this product going back into fostering a healthy environment and sustainability of the planet through a partnership with the National Wildlife Foundation. Over the past 3 years, Wild Kombucha has moved from a garage to a 4,000 square foot brewery in Timonium, Maryland, where they now produce 4,000 bottles a week for stores such as Whole Foods and Mom's Organic Market, as well as hundreds of boutiques, bars, and cafes throughout the Mid-Atlantic region. We are going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back with Sid.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
You're listening to The Tidbit, and we are here with Sid Sharma of Wild Kombucha. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
This is fantastic. I want to really focus first on your company motto, and that is drink local, live wild. I absolutely love it. And we just discussed this interconnectedness of product, environment, capitalism, revolving around the straw. But Sid, I know the environment and the health of the planet means quite a bit to you. And this phrase, drink local, live wild, is a direct connection to your passion, but also relates to Wild Kombucha's mission. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about your entrepreneurship path and how this motto manifests in your operations on a day-to-day basis.
So prior to starting Wild Kombucha, I actually went to environmental school where I mastered in environmental management.
Wow.
Yeah. So from day one, the environment's been something very important to us. And then tying that back into our motto, I like to break it down into the two parts. So drink local is all about just supporting our local community, supporting the makers in that community. And the idea is, if you put dollars into the hands of local people, local shop owners, they put it back into the community. It's the idea that the tide raises all ships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that drink local piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the live wild, obviously, our partnership with the National Wildlife Federation and how we give for the conservation of wildlife habitats, but also the way we've built our business. So we definitely built our business in a gutsy way. You know, we have taken $0 of investment. We've taken chances. The way we built out our brewery now is we had already moved in and we had to win a business competition to afford the build out. And we were fortunate enough to do that.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah,
so, that is a gutsy move.
Yeah. So we're just trying to kind of share that idea with the people that consume our product. You know, the idea that don't be afraid to take chances and support the community around you.
Drink local, live wild.
There it is.
There's a really cute mascot.
Yes.
What do you call?
That is Boyd the Bunny.
Boyd the Bunny. Where did this come from?
At the very early stages of our business, we reached out to this German graphic designer and we let him know that we needed a logo. Somewhere in translation, that became mascot. So he sent us back a few different designs, and one of them was this rabbit, and we just felt extremely connected to it from day one. And we actually didn't have it on our bottle at first. We'd been holding on to it for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we decided to make the switch to these caps that had a design on it. And we thought it was a perfect fit for our mission with NWF. And mm-hmm. So we threw Boyd on there, and the people seem to love him.
It's amazing. And I think exactly, it's not just the motto, but then also the graphics you use and the name of your business that all intersect with why you do what you do. It's the core of what we often talk about on the Tidbit is people need to build businesses with that heart center in mind.
Definitely. I think that is an enormous piece of what goes in our company culture as well. Just the fact that we have implemented that mission and these ideas throughout our business, and they're so forward facing, I think it kind of inspires our whole team.
Absolutely. And you've grown Wild Kombucha regionally instead of that expansion to New York City or Los Angeles. I think many entrepreneurs feel like you have to make that jump from tier one city to tier one city in order to survive. And I would really love if you could elaborate on your experience starting a business in the Mid-Atlantic and what makes it different, because I don't know that many people understand the enormous opportunity this region presents.
When we first started the business, we started it in Baltimore, primarily because that's where the three of us are from. Mm. So we are all childhood friends. We've known each other since we were 14 years old.
Wow.
And we wanted to grow it in our home city. We did not really realize how amazing it is to grow a business in the Mid-Atlantic until we started doing it. So the accessibility to cities like Philadelphia, cities like DC, like New York, it's so prevalent. But at the same time, we were able to grow our business in Baltimore, where those costs are not as high.
Mm.
You know, with the development in shipment, but also just internet, social media, the ability to reach people, you don't need to be in New York or LA to reach people in New York or LA. And I think the sooner people realize that building it in your own city creates this customer base that's loyal and understands you, and you understand them, and you can really build something great.
Yeah, and part of that is that manufacturing of your product. And I love that you just brought up the cost of space, right? Because you moved from Baltimore City, now you're in Timonium. And if, listener, you're not familiar with the surroundings of Baltimore between, I'll say DC to Baltimore, there are a lot of these pockets of food manufacturing and food business. In Jessup, there's a produce hub outside of Baltimore City, whether it's Timonium or even Ellicott City or Columbia, Maryland. There are a lot of spaces for food manufacturing. So how did that come into the fold? Did you know about this?
We honestly had no idea when we were looking for new spaces. We had just outgrown the side of the juice shop we were in.
Uh-huh.
And we started talking to different organizations that own a bunch of properties in the area. So we reached out to Merit Properties.
Mm.
And they showed us this 3,500 square foot space. And we just thought the energy was amazing. And then we realized that used to be Michelle's Granola.
Wow.
And Michelle's actually a friend. So we reached out to her, asked her what she thought about the space. And about 3 months later, we moved in.
That's beautiful. And that sort of leapfrogging between garage to juice shop to Timonium warehouse. I mean, those are big jumps.
Definitely. And actually, to give you a little spoiler alert, we're getting ready to move into a new brewery within the next 12 months. So we're looking at right around 13,000 square feet.
Oh my gosh. That is a fantastic piece there. I mean, this goes directly into what I wanted to really focus on with you next. And that is that a lot of entrepreneurs are faced with questions around access to capital. And you just disclosed this another amazing jump in your business. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but Wild Kombucha has seen a 200% increase in sales since 2015 with, like you mentioned, $0 of outside investment. I mean, I'm clapping for you. That is a huge, proud moment. Oh, wow.
There it is.
Amazing. Thanks with the applause. So I'm wondering, what has been your strategy for financing, especially cash flow gaps with hiring people, production, and can you tell us a bit more behind the curtain of this incredible growth?
We really grew in stages and incrementally. It sounds like a large percentage, but we've just always taken it step by step. We never thought, you know, we need the largest tank possible in order to make product 10 years out. We've always just taken it step by step. And there's tons of amazing resources out there for you if you are looking for funding. And we were fortunate enough to get a $150,000 loan through the Boost Fund.
Mm.
So the way the Boost Fund works is they actually take money from the local casinos and they allot it to the growth of small businesses in the area.
Wow, in Maryland.
In Maryland. And there's tons of resources like this out there for you, and they'll offer you a very favorable interest percentage that's almost like inflation. And that's really allowed us to jump to that next step and really get the manufacturing up to that point where our bottling line puts out typically 1,800 bottles an hour. And on a given Monday now, we're putting out about 9,600 bottles.
Wow. So my even quota, 4,000 bottles a week, totally wrong.
I wasn't going to let you know that, yeah. But now you know.
No, that's fantastic. And I think that's a very important point to emphasize, that you didn't take more money than you needed at that given time. You were growing organically.
Exactly. I feel like within small businesses and startups, there's this emphasis on run rate, and you need to have a run rate 6 months out. We never did that.
No.
We just sat down and we said, what do we have to buy next? And we grew our business in a way and at a rate that we were able to keep going and grow in a healthy manner without stretching ourselves thin in terms of payments we had to make monthly on a loan or things like that.
Yeah. And I think that also shows up in the accounts you've been able to capture. A lot of entrepreneurs I've spoken with, especially in the retail space, are just gunning for just the Whole Foods, Moms, even obviously now Amazon, the Kroger, the big box retail. But you've taken an exact opposite approach of, sure, those are a piece of your portfolio, but by all means, they're not all of it.
Yeah, I think a big piece of it is the fact that we have not forgotten where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
And these mom and pop shops, these cafes, these restaurants, they took a chance on us at the beginning. You know, they were willing to work with us and they helped our business grow. So we've been able to build this large network of businesses that we work with. And we're in about 500 stores now. And the main part is that that's only within 120 miles of our brewery.
What? 500 stores, 120 miles.
Yeah. And the thing for us is it's all about saturation. It's about visibility. You know, because at this point, we're still building brand awareness. A lot of people don't know who we are. But if you start seeing our bottle in 3-4 places when you're walking up the street, you start to recognize Boyd the Bunny. You start to recognize Wild Kombucha.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. We are sitting down with Sid Sharma, the co-owner of Wild Kombucha. We are going to take a quick break and be right back. Service Radio. You're listening to The Tidbit at The Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. We are here with Sid Sharma, the co-owner of Wild Kombucha. Hello, Sid.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you for being here. So we often, by we, I mean the collective of entrepreneurs and small business owners, I think we focus a lot on the parts of business around the business planning itself, and also the product, that we tend to overlook the actual nuts and bolts of how products are actually produced at scale. And you've met with Governor Hogan of Maryland to discuss legislative options for growing companies in Maryland. And I would love to hear your opinion on where do you see the future of food manufacturing going, and with that Maryland lens.
So I believe that First of all, Governor Hogan, extremely nice guy. Mm. I've had the opportunity to meet him a few times, and each time I've had wonderful conversations, and I think people will be shocked at the candidness that their local representatives will have if you sit down with them and have that conversation, and how receptive they can be.
Wow, that's a good plug for getting involved with your local government.
For sure. So the first time I sat down with them, the conversation was all about access to capital for young entrepreneurs. Mm. And I described this perpetual cycle to him that if you've never had a loan before, you do not have an established credit. If you do not have an established credit, you can't get a loan. It's this perpetual cycle that we ran into having started our business when we were 24 years old. Mm. And he was extremely receptive to it and pointed me towards a few of these programs, including that Boost Fund that we ended up capitalizing on.
Wow, that's amazing.
But to refer back to the direction that I think food manufacturing is going, I think people are going to realize that a product that you can make in-house has much more of an impact than one produced in these large co-packing facilities. So I think you're going to see it almost like you've seen the microbrewery industry kind of spread out and there's tons of smaller manufacturers around. I believe that's what you're going to see in food, just because if you're producing a product at a co-packer and they're making other products similar to yours, those differentiating factors go away.
Fascinating. And just so our listener knows, can you describe what a co-packer is?
Yes. So a co-packer is a manufacturer that produces tons of different products from different brands for people and then ships it to them. So the advantage of that is that you do not have to acquire the equipment to produce your product. But the disadvantage is that obviously you lose out on the margin, and also you're not making it yourself. So it might not have that touch that it did when you first developed that product.
And possibly the quality control.
Exactly.
Because now you've given over your recipe, that production, to an outsourced company.
Exactly. And I think another piece of it is just the identity. You know, we pride ourselves on making our product in our brewery and having that control over it. You know, when Wild Kombucha goes out, it's at that exact point that me, Adam, and Sergio wanted to see it at.
Mm. Do you think that, again, that future of food manufacturing, do you think it lives in an urban area, in a rural area? Where do you think it grows?
I think it's a combination, because there's certain types of food and certain types of manufacturing that requires a lot of space. And there's other types of manufacturing that just requires specific equipment, but not necessarily that much space. And we've seen tons of manufacturers move into the Timonium area, as you described. And the biggest reason for that is I think there's just a lot of great facilitators. And as cities realize that manufacturing allows this entire ecosystem to be formed, and employment and
job creation. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. Job creation. Because one of the biggest things I've looked at is everyone's trying to attract these companies, the Googles, the Amazons of the world.
For sure.
But these skilled labor jobs aren't necessarily the people that need this employment.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturing opens up the gate to everyone that's just willing to learn, you know, how to do a few different things.
And that potentially lower entry job at those organizations are maybe janitorial or admin assistant.
Exactly.
And I am a strong believer that people want to have purpose and produce something. I mean, that tangible output of like, I made this and somebody's buying it.
Exactly. There's those invisible ceilings also when a company is so established. You know, one thing we pride ourselves on is offering some of our early employees phantom equity.
Mm.
You know, the ability to own a little bit of our company. And if we sell our company, in our eyes, there is no reason why they shouldn't benefit as well.
Wow, that's fantastic. We are drinking watermelon hops.
Yes,
which is one of your fan favorites. Can mm-hmm. you tell us a bit more of how this was concocted?
Yeah, so our watermelon hops is actually produced a little bit differently than the rest of our kombuchas. So most of our kombuchas are about a 2-week process, start to finish. So the way you make kombucha is you make tea just like you would on the stove. Then we add a SCOBY, which is an acronym for symbiotic culture bacteria and yeast. And then we'll add the different organic juices we add to flavor our product, bottle it, and that's ready to go in the fridge.
Wow.
But the thing that makes watermelon hops different is we dry hop the kombucha for about a week to give it that extra flavor. So what that means is you just drop hops in there and really let that flavor infuse with the liquid. And that's what gives it just a completely different taste than most kombuchas out there.
It's fantastic. I highly recommend you frequenting one of these 500 stores to pick one up. But I wanted to bring up the watermelon hops because you referenced the boom of the microbrewery industry and having that equate to the future of food manufacturing, these sort of smaller outposts of people producing their product from start to finish. And I had just mentioned to you that I took a trip to Harford County in Maryland, which is a rural county in Maryland. It's about an hour north of Frederick, Maryland. And a lot of farms are now transitioning their crops solely to hops because people want locally grown hops. And I was joking that you said you'd take a staycation to these barn breweries and check them out. But I think you're absolutely right to say that there's this importance of the rural and urban communities coming together in food manufacturing, because in the Mid-Atlantic, we have that whole supply chain or the potential to. Maybe not with citrus fruits, but...
Exactly. And I think we need more people like yourself really dictating these relationships and making it known that someone can get these products. You know, there's probably tons of manufacturers throughout DC, throughout Maryland, that are using a lot of ingredients that they could source locally, mm-hmm. but they just don't know where to go. Or since our biggest resource at this stage is time, they don't have the time to find it.
Yes. I'm just going to use that over and over again. You are absolutely right. And we talk a lot about, you were saying, you know, access to capital. That was one of the things you spoke about with Governor Hogan. But I've been on this kick to really emphasize access to social capital, too, because you just don't know who you don't know.
Exactly.
It's impossible. And so you're 100%. I am with you. How are we bridging these rural and urban divides? And I am so pleased that you are here in studio to talk more about that. So how can people find you, whether it's online or in stores? Do you want to call out some ways people can stay involved in the wild kombucha world?
Yeah, so check us out on Instagram at it's just wild_kombucha. We have tons of events throughout the city and in the area. We love to do cocktail events, and whenever we release a new product, we love to feature a local musician.
Ooh.
And kind of have a fun night at a local bar or a local restaurant. So that's one way. And then also check us out on our website. It's just mobtownfermentation.com.
Mobtown.
Yep.
Love it. So this show is based on a biweekly newsletter that we send out at Curate called The Tidbit. And in it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. 5 quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So if you're eager to learn more tidbits of knowledge about the food and beverage industry, starting and growing a business, or entrepreneurship lessons learned, sign up today. Just head over to curate.co, curate.co, and sign up. Until next time, everybody, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.